Hello, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler. Representative Cleborne.
Present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Meckland, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Keeler. Representative Thompson. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Today we will be walking through the provisions in House File 7, the Higher Education Omnibus Bill. We will have our nonpartisan staff take the lead and walk us through the bill, followed by time for member questions and discussions. Members, today I am happy to share this bill with you, coming out of an unprecedented year with all the firsthand student testimony we received this session. We know Minnesotans in college and post-secondary jobs, skills, programs have been
Chair Bernardi, you accidentally muted yourself.
Oh my goodness. Okay, thank you very much. Not sure where I did that at. Was it very long, Representative Sandsted?
No.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that. So I'm proud of the package our committee crafted together to serve students now and in the future. Minnesota students deserve the opportunity to achieve their dreams and provide economic security for themselves and their families. In our compromised budget, we are investing in Minnesotans so they can thrive and emerge stronger post-COVID-19. With us to walk through the bill, we have our House Fiscal Analyst, Kent Savory, along with Nathan Hopkins from House Research. And with us today for technical questions, we also have Nikki Oliver, the Grants and Government Relations Manager of the Office of Higher Education, and Commissioner Dennis Olson, Office of Higher Education. And I want to we'll start with, I believe, Ken Savory is going to walk us through the budget spreadsheet. Were you expecting to go first, Mr. Savory?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe Representative Kreisha has his hand up if you wanted to address his question first. Otherwise, I'll proceed with the walkthrough.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your opening remarks. I was just curious, you mentioned this is the product of the committee work. Can you please explain to me how you define the committee work? It seems to me this was made by just a small group of people to come to this, but I'd love to hear how we get the definition of committee work out of that.
Our bill before us today have all the provisions that were heard in the House and the Senate, and we had a budget bill of $120 million, and it has now had to be reduced. Our target was to $100 million, and so all these provisions that you have heard in this bill, our members have been a part of the ones that have been on the House side, and we will hear more today about any additions that have been added from the Senate side. Representative Krisha, do you have a follow-up?
I would just say that's one way to see it. Of course, all those bills died in regular session, and now we're in special session. So I understand how you got here. I would fundamentally disagree that it would actually be the right process, but it is what the House DFL has chosen.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. I would like to move on with Mr. Mr. Savior.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll go ahead and share my screen and we can walk through the spreadsheet.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, you should be, and members, you should see a spreadsheet up on the screen now. And that would, the timestamp in the corner is 11:57 on the 3rd of June. And so I'll just orient members to the spreadsheet briefly, and then we'll walk through the change items that are in the bill. And so we'll be speaking today regarding columns J, which is the Chair's agreement in FY21, and then columns K, L, M, and N, and those contain the budget for FY22-23, the change from base for FY22-23, the tails projection for 24-25, and then the difference from 24-25 to the base in 24-25. So I'll just refresh members. On the target for the higher education bill was $100 million above base, and the committee, and the agreement has $105,340,000 in new spending, which is line 11 of the spreadsheet. Once that is netted out, you get to the $100 million target, which is on line 15 for the total net general fund of $3,506,128,000 FY22-23. We'll start with the Office of Higher Education. And the first change item is for the state grant program. It's on line 21, and that is $5,200,000 FY22-23, and the identical amount in 24-25. Scrolling down, you'll see the list of riders within the bill that end on line 66. And I'll speak directly to the change items themselves, which begin on line 70 and then conclude on line 88. And so some of these will be familiar to members. These were House positions. I'll try to do my best to point those out as we move through the bill. And so the first one is on line 71, which is agency administration. And that's $354,000 in FY22-23, and the same amount in FY24-25. The House did include a provision to increase this appropriation in the prior bill. It was slightly higher. On line 72, interstate tuition reciprocity. This was the reduction to interstate tuition reciprocity, which the House and the governor carried, and that is $5,036,000. In FY22-23 and the identical amount in 24-25. On line 73, you'll see ICAP, or Intervention for College Attendance Program. In the first year, there's $358,000. The second year, $357,000, for a total of $715,000. And then the amount in the final year goes into the tails for $714,000 increase in the tails. Line 74 is a change to College Possible. This was a Senate position, and that amount is $50,000 in each fiscal year, so a total of $100,000 in FY22-23, and then the same amount in 24-25. Moving down several lines, you'll see the reduction of line 77 for the dual training and competency grants, the appropriation that went to Dolly and is now in the jobs bill. And so that is a reduction of $200,000 each fiscal year. Moving down to line 78, you'll see the emergency assistance for post-secondary students. That's an appropriation of $94,000 in each fiscal year in FY22-23. And the appropriation tails increase to $144,000 in each fiscal year in 24 and 25. Line 79, you'll see grants to teaching candidates, our student teacher grants. This was a similar position which the House carried, where this is a reduction in splitting the program into two pieces. This program, due to the reduction of $750,000 each fiscal year, will exclusively serve applicants in shortage areas, and then we'll see on a line upcoming on the spreadsheet the new program. And so on line 80 is that new program, which is the grants to underrepresented teacher candidates, and that's $1 million in each fiscal year, and then in 22-23, and then in the tails, that is $1,125,000 in FY24-25. And then on line 81, this is an increase to Minnesota Independence College and Community, MICC, of $250,000 in each fiscal year. And that is a one-time increase. And it reverts back to the base in 24-25. Line 83 is the Hunger Free Campus Act. And those appropriations are $205,000 in the first year and $102,000 in the second year. And then $102,000 in 24 and 25. Line 84 is the Fostering Independence for Higher Education Grants. That is an appropriation of $238,000 in the first year and $3,759,000 in the second year. The appropriation changes slightly in the tails to $3,761,000 in each fiscal year in FY24 and 25. Moving down the spreadsheet a little further, on line 86 is the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarships. That appropriation is $1.5 million in each fiscal year, but this appropriation only occurs in FY22 and 23. The appropriation does not occur in FY24-25. Moving down more to direct admissions Minnesota. Is on line 87, and that is the House position at $925,000 in the first year, $75,000 in the second year, and then the $75,000 continues in FY24 and 25. So that wraps up increases for the Office of Higher Education. You'll see on line 96, the total appropriation for the Office of Higher Education, and the difference above base is $10,425,000 in FY22-23.
Excuse me, let's pause right here. I see we have Representative O'Neill's hand up. Would you like to ask now or after we're through the spreadsheet?
I'd like to ask now, I think, just so that we know we basically have three buckets and it'd be easier to take them in three chunks. And so I'd like to ask now if I could, Chair.
Yes, proceed, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back on line 24, we're increasing OHE's administration costs by $354,000. And I'm wondering if the administration could explain what that increase is for, and it's also in the tails. So if they could explain why they need an increase.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dennis Olson, Commissioner, Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Representative O'Neill, thank you for the question. That increase is for a inflationary increase and cost of living increase for current OHE staff.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And then when we were walking through this before, I think it was the working group or something, something caught my ear about the direct admissions, which of course I've opposed since we began these discussions, and it's still there, $1 million to figure out how to send a letter to high school seniors. But I believe I heard either the chair or maybe it was the commissioner say that it's actually only inclusive of 7 high schools. Can you let me know how many high schools are going to be included in this $1 million project to figure out how to send all high school seniors in that school district a letter?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Neill, it will be up to 10 public school districts, and the Senate had added language that it be inclusive of the entire state. So we'll be looking at schools not only in the metro area, but also greater Minnesota.
And, Representative, go ahead. Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, sorry, Madam Chair. Rep. O'Neill, I've also failed to mention that we are going to be looking at the public school districts and the high schools that represent all of the student information systems that are currently utilized in the K-12 space to make sure that once we build the pilot, it'll be built correctly and able to be implemented statewide once we capture all those student information systems. So that's the intent of capturing up to 10 high schools, just to make sure that the technology is fully covered there in the first implementation year.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I'm going to hold that for the floor. I think we're going to have a very long and robust conversation about the higher ed bill and how it came to be. I appreciate Representative Krisha pointing that out off the bat, that it was the two chairs, House and Senate chair, and the commissioner, and nobody else was in the room except for maybe some staff to document what they were doing. It was not public, and we're going to hear a lot about that on the House floor, so buckle up and get ready. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That wraps up the Office of Higher Education, and we'll proceed to Minnesota State, and that part of the spreadsheet begins on line 99. The first change item is on line 102, which is refers to line 103, which is the central office and shared services increase. This was a Senate change item, and that increase to that appropriation is $2,015,000 in FY22-23, and then it changes in FY24-25 to $2,654,000 in the tails. Just as a reminder to members, on line 107 to line 121, our riders as they appear in the bill. So those are just the appropriations that appear in the rider appropriations that appear in the bill for operations and maintenance. And then I'll point specifically on line 123 to line 131. Those are the changes that were included for Minnesota State in the bill. And so the first change is to the O&M increase or operations and maintenance increase. And that is $45 million in FY22-23 and the same amount in FY24-25. Line 125 is the supplemental aid to non-metro colleges. That is an increase of $5,400,000 in FY22-23, and then the identical amount in 24 and 25. And then on line 126, our workforce developmental scholarships increase, which is $1 million over the FY22-23 biennium, and the same $1 million increase in FY24-25. Next on line 127 is the Z degree textbook program. That is a $250,000 increase in each fiscal year in FY22 and 23. And then the appropriation changes reduces to $50,000 increase in FY24 and 25. Skipping down a few lines, the next item is on line 130, which is the mental health awareness program. And that is a $1.5 million increase in the first year of the biennium and is therefore one time. The next item is on line 131, which is supporting students' basic needs. That is $1 million in the first fiscal year and is a one-time appropriation. And then, Madam Chair, I'll just point out on line 135 are the total change items. So the total change items being $56,415,000 in FY22-23 and then $54,154,000 in 24-25. So that concludes the Minnesota State changes, and I can pause here to take questions.
Representative O'Neill.
Madam Chair. I'm wondering if the chair could remind us what the initial ask was and what their lowered ask was for Minn State and why they asked for the initial amount and why they lowered the initial amount. And now we landed far below that. So I'm wondering if you could explain that to us, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Neill, Minnesota State originally asked for $75 million for their O&M. They also had additional funds for scholarships that they also requested. That was not included in this budget. The governor is doing workforce stabilization grants of an equal amount that Minnesota State had asked for. That same amount in the initial request. We have in the bill, we have $45 million for O&M for Minnesota State, as well as supplemental aid to the colleges of $5.4 million and some to their, let's see, I'm not seeing it on there. There was one more, the central offices that's in the yellow down there. Mr. Savory, can you help me with the spreadsheet on that one where that's showing up?
Certainly, Madam Chair. If you're looking for the central offices increase, that is on line 103, and that shows $2 million, and the total for the central offices is line 104.
Thank you very much. Representative O'Neill.
So I would note that that's, even if you include the central office, the extra money for non-metro schools and the O&M, and you put it all together, that's only 74% of their ask. And I would point out again that there's obviously a preference for the University of Minnesota, who received 83% of their ask. So we'll have more conversation about that on the floor as well, of why we're giving so much preference to the University of Minnesota when they have other means to support themselves. And literally, Minn State has two buckets. It's the state appropriations and the tuition, which you did freeze, even though it wasn't a zero increase, it's still frozen. So I'm not sure how they're going to respond to that. I don't think they're even in this committee. I don't think they're even here to testify, as I recall. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you even allow public testimony to have them say how this affects them? Are we going to take public testimony today, Madam Chair?
If anyone, this is our third public meeting on this bill. Anyone who is asked to testify has been allowed to. We have one public testimony that has been submitted.
Okay, I was under the understanding that this meeting did not include any public testimony, but this is the first time that the public is actually hearing the product of the two chairs and the commissioner. So I think that the public should probably weigh in. I hope that Minn State weighs in on the amount of money that we're giving them or not giving them, for that matter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And just for correction, this is our third public meeting on this bill. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just concerned that before we end this meeting today, that we get a review of the federal dollars that have flowed to both Minnesota State colleges and to the University of Minnesota. I'm looking at some of the attachments that were included and would like to have further explanation of some of that. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson, would you be able to share with that with the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Yeah, I need to understand a little bit more what the question pertains to. Are you looking at a specific bill or just holistically across the three federal packages?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Erickson.
I think the total picture, the same way that we look at it in K-12 or E-12, We had the ESSER funds, and now we have these coming from the federal government. Just remind us of the total amounts that the university has received and the total amounts that the state college system has received. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. I don't have those spreadsheets right in front of me. I can try to dig them up from the U.S. Department of Education's website. They do have an allocation for each public college and university, as well as those in the private nonprofit, as well as proprietary sector that have received money from the three bills. And so I could try to pull that up and get a grand total. And I certainly don't want to put fiscal staff on the spot, but if fiscal staff maybe has that closer at their fingertips, that may be helpful. But, just a brief reminder that across the three bills, although allocated a little differently, exactly half went to students and various emergency aid packages and provisions, and the remainder was utilized by the institution themselves to address revenue replacement and other costs associated with COVID. So I'll try my best, Representative Erickson, to pull that total together.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Olson. And if you could get that to us before we debate this proposal on the House floor, I would appreciate it, and I think my colleagues would as well. This is a lot of money, and I want to make sure that if there are intended tuition increases, that our students have been taken care of through these federal dollars. Moreover, is the governor going to use some of his discretionary money to send it to any of our institutions, especially the state college system? Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out for members that the conference committee on the higher ed bill did hear a lot of testimony from both systems on how they were allocating and spending their federal funds. That was on May 13th, 2021. The recording is on YouTube, and you can see a lot of the spreadsheets and information that the system submitted on the conference committee's webpage still. So that was the May 13th conference committee meeting where we heard a lot of testimony about federal fund usage.
Thank you. Seeing no further hands, please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes the MinState portion, and we'll move on to the U of M, University of Minnesota. The change items to the University of Minnesota begin on line 104, and the first one is on line 155, which is an O&M increase for the operation and maintenance. That is $38 million in FY22-23. And then $36 million in FY24-25. The next change item is on line 170, and that is an increase to the system special. This is similar to a house position that was taken into conference, but that is now slightly different. So instead of the $1 million increase in each fiscal, or the $1 million increase, the increase is now $500,000 to NRRI as part of the system special. And you can see the change in the system special appropriation itself on line 163. And then that change is only one time, so you can see the numbers revert back to the same appropriation as before. So again, the system special increased by $500,000 one time in FY22-23. And Madam Chair, that concludes the University of Minnesota, and we can pause there for questions.
Are there any questions? I see no hands. And that concludes your presentation, Mr. Savory.
It does, Madam Chair. I was just going to make one point that the Mayo Foundation appropriations are included in the bill and are unchanged from the base So yes, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Savory. Now we're going to move on to Mr. Hopkins.
All right. Madam Chair and members, I'm going to walk through some of the changes in policy items in the bill since the committee last heard the bill. So I'm going to highlight the differences between the House bill that was passed off the floor and the version in HF7 that's before us now. I'll be going through the page and line numbers of HF7 if any members want to follow along. The major change I'd like to highlight within Article 1 to beyond the normal appropriation changes that Mr. Savory discussed begins on page 12, line 11. This is in the Mid-State Operations and Maintenance Appropriation. The House bill previously had frozen tuition for Mid-State, but as you'll see on 12.11, the current bill, HF7, prohibits undergraduate tuition rates at colleges and universities from rising by more than 3.5% per year. So there's that new 3.5% cap as opposed to the freeze that the House had. Moving on within this same subdivision, starting at 12.32, this is a new provision that came from the Senate. This requires Minnesota State to request advice from the United States Department of Education on whether it's permissible to use its federal COVID relief funds to issue tuition credits or refunds to students in order to refund them for extra money that they paid because their classes were moved online during the coronavirus pandemic. So that is the only major policy change to highlight within Article 1. So I'll move on to Article 2 and discuss some of the new and changed things in Article 2. Starting at page 24, line 20, for the state grant program, the assigned family responsibility. So you'll see that HF7 lowers the AFR for each category of students by 3 percentage points. So that's different than the original House bill, which had lowered the amounts from 82% for independent students, that it didn't lower that at all. The 73% was lowered, the 74% was lowered by 1% to 73, and the 38% was lowered by 1% for, so 38 became 37 in the House bill. So the House had 82, 73, 37, and this bill has 79, 71, 35. And that's on 24.20. Continuing with the state grant program, on page 25, line 23, the cost of attendance. So this is the default living and miscellaneous expense allowance in law. So the House had raised this from 106% to 113%. House File 7 raises it, but from 106% to 109% of the federal poverty guidelines for a one-person household. On page 26, line 23, this is a new provision for the Minnesota ReConnect program. The Minnesota ReConnect program was established in 2019. But it's no longer receiving any funding. So this section is a new section which clarifies that the commissioner only has to administer the program to the extent there are funds available to do so. Staying on page 26, line 27, this is a new provision that came over from the Senate, the Fostering Independence Higher Education Grants. This establishes a last dollar grant program for students who are currently or were formerly in foster care. The House did hear a bill on this. It was Representative Herr's House File 1802, which was similar and similar intent, but the language did change a bit in the Senate when this came over. Moving on to page 32 of the bill, line one. So this is the child care grant program. The House had set the maximum award amount for each eligible child per academic year at the maximum Pell Grant amount, which was $6,345. And so the amount would have changed based on how the federal government set the maximum Pell amount. But you'll see in House File 7, the amount has been raised to $6,500. So that's a change. On page 36 of the bill, line 7. So this is the student teacher grants in shortage areas. So this program changed because the House spun off the underrepresented student teacher candidate grants, and that was taken. So that's not a change from the original House position. But the shortage area teacher grant program, student teacher grant program, has changed from the original House position in that this the Senate had language to expand the program to student teachers who intend to teach in a rural school district. So that's a new change to this. House File 7 also adds a new definition of license shortage area. So these will be determined by the Office of Higher Education in coordination with PELSB, using data from the Teacher Supply and Demand Report. But the licensure areas that are eligible under this program have to come from the several enumerated subject areas that are there on page 36, lines 24 to 29. On page 39 of the bill, line 1, this is the self-refi program, the student loan refinancing program. This changed. The House had, there are two components to this. There's the maximum total amount of loans that can be refinanced under self-refi. In the original House position, the Office of Higher Education was allowed to set that amount on its own based on what it thought the program could sustain. Under House File 7, there's still a maximum total amount that can be refinanced for the program as a whole, and that amount has been increased from $100 million to $300 million. Another change within this, so the maximum total loan that can be issued to any individual under the program, the House had it at $250,000. House File 7 has lowered that to a $200,000 cap. Just below the next section, so this is Section 15 of Article 2, beginning on 39.11. This is the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. So this was not addressed in the House bill originally. So this is part of House File 7 that's new to this committee. First of all, the program is renamed from a loan forgiveness program to a loan repayment program. The definition of teacher shortage area in the existing statute is replaced with the new definition of a licensure shortage area from that student teacher grant program and shortage areas, which I discussed earlier. And the program is also expanded to include teachers from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups in the teacher workforce and teachers who teach in a rural school district. On page 44, line 15, so this is for the dual training competency grants. And the relevant change here is around page 45, line 7. The House had originally included a requirement that made the employer's demonstrated commitment to recruit, train, and retain employees of color, American Indian employees, and employees with disability as a factor that could be considered in awarding the grants. That is not included in House File 7. Beginning on page 48.13 of the bill, Section 28, this is the risk analysis provision. This was in the House bill originally, but if the committee members would turn to page 52, line 8, the data classification subdivision. of this provision. So originally, when the bill passed the House, we just had the first sentence of this subdivision, which classified all the data as financial records, which would have made them not publicly available. This language was modified, and in House File 7, you'll see that there are certain categories of enumerated data which are publicly available under this risk analysis section. Page 57, line 27. The concurrent enrollment grants. So this was one of the governor's proposals. It was in the House bill originally, but it has undergone some changes. So the big change here is the House had originally allowed these concurrent enrollment grants to be used for high school tuition for high school teachers that were seeking a certification to teach CE classes to help create online graduate tracks for those high school teachers and help support them with their tuition. But those uses for the grants have been eliminated in House File 7. So those are no longer included. On page 59, line 3, section 36 of the bill, this is a new provision from the Senate. It requires Minnesota State to implement a mental health awareness program at each college and university. The next section of the bill, section 37, on page 60, line 3, student success basic needs barrier reduction. This is also a new provision that came from the Senate. This creates new requirements for MnState to inform students about various assistance programs, especially food assistance programs like SNAP. Page 60, line 24. The hunger-free campus designation. Some of the changes that happened with this provision since it passed the House, institutions are required to reapply for the designation every 4 years. That's a new provision. Also, if you look beginning on page 61, line 22, the provisions addressing the competitive grant program to give money to institutions in order for them to achieve this designation, that has been incorporated into the statute rather than being part of the appropriation rider as it was in the original House bill. So there's going to be a competitive grant program. Institutions that receive grants are required to do a 50% match of the grant award amount. The House originally required a 100% match, and the Senate required a 25% match. So the House File 7 has a 50% match. This also takes the Senate approach of allowing both initial and sustaining grants for institutions. So initial grants are for institutions so that they can get the designation when they haven't had it before, and sustaining grants are for institutions that have had the designation and want to continue working to maintain it. The maximum amounts for initial grants are $8,000, and the maximum amount for sustaining grants is $5,000. The Z degree program is something that was originally included in the House bill, section 39, beginning on page 62, line 17. If you look to page 63, though, line 26, regarding how many additional colleges and universities have to offer a Z degree program, the House had originally said two additional colleges or universities by the 2023-2024 academic year. The Senate bill had required 8 additional by the 2022-2023 academic year. So House File 7, the new bill adds a requirement that 4 additional state colleges or universities offer the degree by the 2023-2024 academic year. Also in the reporting requirements for the Z degrees, the Senate added a provision to the report that requires information on incentives offered to faculty to develop these kinds of programs and resources for students. On page 65, line four. Credit for prior learning, section 41 of the bill. This is a new provision from the Senate. It requires Minnesota State to expand credit opportunities for prior learning for work-based experiences and make students aware of the opportunity to get that kind of credit for their prior learning. On page 66, beginning on line six, this is a new provision from the Senate, report on the expense patterns of public higher education institutions. It requires both the MinState Board of Trustees and the University of Minnesota Board of Regents to provide a report to the legislature on expense patterns for public higher education institutions. And that has to include information on various kinds of expenses, especially administrative expenses. On page 67, beginning on line 15, section 44 of the bill, this is the transcript access provision. This was included in the original House bill. In the original House bill, however, it was a codified provision in statute. That's been changed. It's now uncodified, so it will remain in session law. And the intent here is to add some really robust reporting requirements that are included here in House File 7 so that the legislature can assess the effect this new provision has and decide whether or not it wants to make it permanent. Another change to the substance of it. So if you look on page 68, line one, of course, the thrust of this provision is to make sure that schools can't withhold transcripts from students because they owe debts to the school. Originally, the House bill said that the school could not refuse to provide a transcript if the student owed a debt of less than $500. That's been changed to a debt of less than $250. On page 69, beginning on page 9, section 45 of the bill, this is the Aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color Scholarship Pilot Program. So originally this was originally a codified program that would have been permanent. However, the funding for this program is one time only in House File 7. So the program's been changed to a pilot program that will exist only in session law. Madam Chair, that concludes the major policy changes. I will say that a few things from the original House bill that aren't included in House File 7, since looking at House File 7, you can't tell the difference there. The House had originally had a section that allowed the Office of Higher Education to share data on the state's 529 college savings plan with the Department of Revenue for research purposes. That's not included in House File 7. The House had originally had a career and technical educator pilot project. That's not included in House File 7. And the House had a study and report required to Office of Higher Education would have to assess the state's work study program. That is not included in House File 7. So those are the three main things that aren't included in House File 7 that were in the bill that passed off the House floor. So Madam Chair, that concludes the major policy changes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hopkins. Members, are there any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll let Representative Kreisha go first, and I'll go after him. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this question is for nonpartisan staff. If nonpartisan staff could just tell me how many provisions came directly from the Senate that were not heard in the House.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Hopkins.
Sure. So let me go through and really just count them here. So section 43 of the bill, I'm going to work backwards. Section 43 of the bill, it's page 66, the report on expense patterns of public higher education institutions. Section 41 on page 65, credit for prior learning, that requirement on MinState. Section 37 on page 60, student success, basic needs barrier reduction, the Mint State requirement regarding informing students about assistance programs. Section 36 of the bill on page 59, mental health awareness programs. And finally, the on page 26, section 7 of the bill, the Fostering Independence Higher Education Program, although the House did hear Representative Herr's House File 1802, which was about the same program, although the House didn't finally include the foster care grant program in its bill. So Representative Crenshaw, I believe that's all the full sections or entire provisions that were new from the Senate.
Representative Crenshaw, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, and so what was the exact number then? I tried to keep track, but a couple of them were a little bit fuzzy on whether or not they actually didn't get any information in the House.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Hopkins.
Representative Crenshaw, sorry, I forgot to keep count too. one, the report on expense patterns, two, the credit for prior learning, three, the mental health awareness programs, four, the student success basic needs barrier reduction, and if we're not including the foster care grant program, I believe that is it. So four sections.
Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just quickly, thank you, Madam Chair, and just my comments. So I'm just a backwards rule legislator who doesn't understand things, but it seems to me we've sent this bill to Ways and Means, which is already on the House floor, and today we're having an informational meeting, and we're hearing provisions that didn't exist and that have now dropped into here. The new process for this, and to the nonpartisan research staff, you said initially this is backwards, and I think it was an offhanded comment on how you're coming through, but you couldn't be more correct in your statement about what this process is. This is completely backwards. But thank you to the nonpartisan staff. Thank you for all the work that you have to do, because you are responding to the let's wake up and make it up new legislature that we live in. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Hopkins, can you verify if those were reviewed in the House and Senate Conference Committee?
So, Madam Chair, yes. So, when the conference committee met, nonpartisan staff from the House and the Senate walked through the differences between the two bills. So, the conference committee learned about the Senate-only provisions and also the House-only provisions that weren't heard by the other chamber. So, that was something that the conference committee heard. Yes.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I'm not trying to pick a fight with you, but I am trying to be a guardian of the process. The conference committee died when regular session died. That no longer exists. It became working groups that had clandestine conversations that are not part of the process. I understand the position you're in, Madam Chair. I'm not at all calling you out or questioning that. But if we were to step back and our roles were be reversed, and as much as I know you care about the higher ed policy and provisions, you would be increasingly frustrated by the fact that you couldn't fully engage in that. And more importantly, your experience, your tenure, and your knowledge would have been wasted if you were in the minority right now. And I will just share that with you. I hope that you never get to feel that position of being in the minority and all the rules being changed, and you, who I consider with a lot of integrity, having to defend that. I find that to be very disrespectful to you and your tenure here. So I would just share that. I understand the role you're in. I'm just pointing out the facts of how we've done this and the fact that we are calling things that really aren't. Just because it went to conference committee, it should come back as a conference report, not work through it. I mean, we don't have to have legislation 101 here. But let's not pervert the process. Let's not call it something that's not. This is not the way we should do this for Minnesotans. And I'm sorry that you're put in this position, Madam Chair, because frankly, I think this is beneath your level of integrity of what you are with this place. But that's where you are, and that's the position you're in.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate Representative Krisha's words, because I have felt that so deeply. I care so deeply about budget and policy, and I read everything, and I know I ask a lot of questions, and I do because I care. And to be frozen out completely of negotiations and not even know that they were happening. I didn't even know negotiations were happening until a deal was struck. So, and, you know, I have a special relationship with the vice chair of the Senate committee, and he didn't even know what was going on. So this is truly an egregious situation that we find ourselves in. And thank you, Representative Krisha, for pointing that out, because I couldn't have been more frustrated through this entire process. And I'm not really sure what you had read something yesterday in Ways and Means that this was the way it was supposed to be. Well, we found out in Ways and Means that, in fact, there were many ways to approach this these deal makings behind closed doors. And there were other chairs that did include other members. And there were some committees that had a lot of input from the commissioner, and there were some that had a much lesser role. But here's my concern. We are the legislature, and it is our job constitutionally to draft and pass law and budget and send it to the governor. It is not the governor and his administrative branch, executive branch, it is not their responsibility to write law and to pass budgets. That is the legislature's responsibility. The governor has a line item veto power over any budget item that he doesn't like. But this the supposed global agreement takes this so far. If you look at item 7 and item 11, it literally says that the governor has power to write and make demands and put policy in or take policy out. And once he's done that, he can still veto a bill if he wants to, and he can still line item veto. So this is unprecedented power. And here we are again in this tribunal-like situation where two chairs and a commissioner are making decisions. And I find this incredibly egregious and incredibly disappointing. But I actually had another question, but Representative Krisha kind of got me going. I'm going to have a lot more to say about this on the House floor, and I'm sure about 50 of my members probably will too. But my question is, staff had mentioned that the career and technical pilot program was removed, and I'm wondering if they could clarify, was that the portion that Representative Albright had really wanted in, and is that about Winona State? That portion, I just want to be clear as to which portion we're talking about that's no longer there.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, yes, so that was the Career and Technical Educator Pilot Project. It was Winona State University partnering with Minnesota State College Southeast to provide training for CTE teachers. So that's the one that Representative Albright had brought up in the previous committee meeting when we were discussing the omnibus bill before it passed off the House floor. Yes.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. So I'm sorry, I cannot remember. I know that this was something that we kind of put in late in the game, but I can't remember how much was the appropriation that was needed to accomplish that. I wonder if maybe Ken Savory or Nathan Hopkins, either one, if they could just remind me what that was. And I'm sure Representative Albright might have something to say. And before they answer, I just want to point out to the public that are watching, this provision didn't make it in because I wasn't in the room to ask to include it, because this is something that's really important to one of my members. And I was not even in the room to defend this provision, and so here we are. So anyway, if Mr. Savory or Mr. Hopkins can let me know what the cost of this was.
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, Representative O'Neill, the appropriation that came in the House bill that went to the conference was $400,000, but it was only in the first year. So that would be the one-time $400,000. And if members are curious, the line on the spreadsheet that was included in members' packets is line 117. And you'll see the House column has a number in it, and you'll see the conference columns or the agreement columns are blank.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
I don't. I'm wondering, I don't know if if Representative Albright might, but I just wanted to point that out, that this is what happens when three people make all these decisions. And I know that this was a small amount of money. It was incredibly important, and unfortunately, it didn't make it in. And again, the imbalance between, again, funding 83% of the University of Minnesota's ask and about 73%, 74 maybe, of Minn State's. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha, did you mean to take your hand down, or did you put it? Okay, thank
I'm happy
you.
To talk more if you'd like, yeah. But I'll lower my hand.
Okay, got you. Okay, Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I've listened to this presentation and with some dismay, candidly, for the priorities that you and the chair from the Senate have determined to be the focus for the next 2 years for higher education. There are a number of provisions in here that I strongly disagree with or have great reservations about. But as Representative O'Neill shared, it troubles me when your priority as a comparison goes to funding a study group to figure out how to send a letter to what I presumed initially was the entirety of the senior graduating class across Minnesota, and now I understand that it's only for 10 school districts. You're dedicating $900,000 to that in funding $400,000 to a program that literally trains teachers to put people into positions that are open right now that don't require student debt, don't require a four-year degree, but are absolutely going want for applicants that pay anywhere from $75,000 to $100,000. You know, if there's anything that I am starting to realize about the goings-on of this various working groups, if you will, that have put together these bills. I think it, rather than call it a special session, we might even actually coin it the Operation Secret Summer, because that's really what it has become. And the transparency is really lacking, and I would really look forward to a very robust conversation, Representative Bernardi. I think you should prepare yourself well for Thursday.
Members, are there any other questions? I don't see any other questions. And so I will wrap up our committee here. First of all, I want to thank all of our members for being a part of our committee and their contributions. Your involvement has made a huge difference in the higher education bill, and I want to thank you for that. I just want to comment about it's the support for the $2.5 million for the Minnesota State System for Basic Needs and Mental Health. We did have in our bill, and what's included now is similar language, just we took the language of the Senate, and Minnesota State will still get those programs. So that's $2.5 million I wanted to share with you. And I want to let you know that we are grateful for our staff. They have invested a lot of time in this and have worked closely to make all of this happen, our nonpartisan staff, as well as our partisan staff on both sides. And I also want to give a shout out to all the people behind the scenes, like our House Information and our Revisor's Office. That without them, this could not be possible. And the most important part is to thanking the all of our testifiers this year. They, especially our students, we really appreciate the time they invested with us to share their stories and to help us develop this bill that will help our students, you know, get through this pandemic and thrive on the other side to help have successful lives and to be able to support them and their families. So with that, members, I want to thank you for being here today, and hope that you have a great day, and we will see you on the House floor in a few minutes. Have a good day. The meeting is adjourned.